What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. All righty, welcome to the program. Happy Tuesday. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Pete Callender here, 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. Email is pete@thepetecallendershow.com. Make sure you capitalize the as well. I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. And at Pete Callender on the Twitter machine. So the United States House is expected to delay, actually, delivering articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas by at least 1 week, if not longer, according to the Washington Examiner. Against this backdrop, I want to welcome to the program Teresa Opeka. She is a reporter at the Carolina Journal covering the executive branch here in the state of North Carolina. Teresa, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Pete. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, story that you've got at the Carolina Journal, carolinajournal.com, takes a look at the impact of illegal immigration in North Carolina. And I guess you cited the work done by the Federation for American Immigration Reform that put out a report recently. So what is the Federation for American Immigration Reform? What is FAIR?
Yeah, so they take a look at how illegal immigration is impacting all the states, what all the costs are involved, and taking a deeper dive into that. So, yeah, the figures were astounding for North Carolina.
All right, and what do those figures show?
Sure. So what they're showing is there's an estimated 488,000 illegal aliens or immigrants living in North Carolina, almost 500,000. And that includes their 169,000 U.S.-born children. And what that actually means for 2023, they found the cost to North Carolina taxpayers is $3.1 $4 billion, or amounts to $779 per North Carolina household on an annual basis. And they also said the average cost to North Carolinians is about $4,700 per illegal alien. That's just amazing.
Yeah. $4,781 per illegal alien in North Carolina. So this sort of flies in the face of that whole argument I have heard for going on, 25 years, which is that that illegal immigration and particularly the people themselves, the immigrants themselves, are a net positive to the tax rolls, to the treasury, that they generate economic activity, they pay into the system, Social Security, Medicare. They have these things deducted out of their wages, and yet they don't ever draw them down. So there's always been this argument, from the I will call them the open borders crowd, that that this is a good thing, and we should just keep taking advantage of these people paying into the system because it's a net revenue plus for the local governments. This would seem to fly in the face of that argument.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And while they do contribute, maybe they're buying things at a local grocery store. You know, in this report by FAIR, they showed education, it's costing education $1.47 billion for North Carolinians. Police, legal, corrections costs, those are going to prison for crimes that's been well prominent in the news lately, $461.1 million. And there's health care, there's Medicaid, there's other public assistance, costs. It all adds up, and it adds up, astronomically at this point.
You mentioned the criminal charges. They also took a look, you also took a look at the Immigration Customs Enforcement, or ICE. They put out an annual report looking at the number of illegal immigrants that were arrested last year. And are these numbers in your report, are these just for North Carolina arrests?
No, this is for all the United States.
Okay.
So their report, it said nearly half of the 170,000 illegal immigrants arrested in the U.S. in 2023 had multiple criminal charges and convictions. And that includes anything from, you know, kidnapping to homicide, anything like, you know, thefts, anything that related, those are related crimes.
Right. So almost, if we round up, it's 171,000 illegal immigrants arrested in the U.S., had multiple criminal charges and convictions. Do we know if this is, are these charges and convictions in America, or were these charges and convictions prior to them arriving in America?
It looks to be in America.
Gotcha.
It's from what I gathered.
Yeah.
And you look no further to what's happening, you know, the poor nursing student over in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a prime example of what's going on with this.
Yeah, I've seen it. There was another story this morning about a couple of Venezuelan illegal immigrants that have also been charged in some other violent crime as well, which, you know, we did this info yesterday that Venezuela is seeing the lowest, what was it? They've seen the lowest violent crime or homicide rate they've seen in years in Venezuela now. And people in Venezuela say it's because they've released people out of the prisons and they're sending them up here to America, which is a very similar thing that occurred back when Fidel Castro did it with the Cuban prisons. Really, you know, open up the prisons, send all the criminals into America to wreak havoc and, you know, put the burden on our judicial system. So it's not exactly it would not be a brand new tactic for a communist.
No, right. No, not at all.
All right. And so we're looking at this. You write in your report that the state has seen a surge in all types of crimes. But those with the most notoriety, human and sex trafficking, illegal drugs, most notably fentanyl. And then you get into some of the overdose numbers. So kind of go over some of those numbers. And this is from the CDC, right?
Yes. So in 2023, more than 100,000 people died from fentanyl overdoses in the U.S. And over the past 9 years, it's more than 13,000 North Carolinians dying or overdosing on that drug. So far this year, for January, there have been 332 fentanyl deaths in the state. That's a slight drop from a year ago in January, 368 deaths. I mean, it's a slight drop, but that's still an alarming number. We just started the year.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. It's like 11 a day.
Right.
11 overdoses per day in North Carolina alone in the month of January. And the number across the country of over 100,000, there's a candidate running for North Carolina's 8th congressional district, Don Brown, and he makes the point that, you know, we had 58,000 dead in Vietnam, and we've had more than that in one single year. We've had almost twice as many die in 1 year than in the entirety of Vietnam. You write in your report also 14 members of a drug organization with ties to the Mexican cartels, the Sinaloa and the CJNG. I have to admit, I've never heard of the CJNG. Have you heard of them before?
No, I have not.
Okay, yeah, no. I don't know. But they were sentenced to prison time. This was in, and this was for trafficking cocaine and fentanyl and heroin in Charlotte. Over a five-year period. And so these are gang members. These are gangs that are now operating inside the North Carolina city and Charlotte city limits as well. And this also then dovetails into this issue of the 287G program, where people that get arrested and are then not screened through the federal databases and they are released back out very, very quickly by these prosecutors, DAs, but also, you know, sheriff's offices that are not interested in enforcing federal immigration law. And so I wonder, is there any kind of a reassessment maybe of whether or not these programs should actually be reinstituted that you're aware of? Is there talk at the General Assembly of this? Is there talk in the executive branch about, you know, maybe just tightening up a teensy weensy little bit, maybe just a smidge?
Yeah, a smidge, right? At least that would help. There's nothing at the moment. However, there was House Bill 10, which was titled Require Sheriffs to Cooperate with ICE. And it would have required sheriffs to contact ICE if they couldn't confirm citizenship status for somebody they arrested for a serious felony, violent crime, you know, like a rape, you know, and anything like that. It passed in the House last March, but it ended in the Senate Rules Committee at that same time. So basically, it's dead in the water. They have to reintroduce that. That would be something to call your legislators about and get behind that, because that would be an important piece to get through so this can actually take place. Because even in the Charlotte area, you've had, you know, sheriffs say that they're not going to cooperate with ICE. And look what's happening. This would be the perfect way to get that reinstated or pushed forward.
Yeah, that was House Bill 10. They are coming back into the short session, so they could essentially take that bill up again and push it through. And maybe it becomes more of an issue now in this short session. We shall see. They get ready to reconvene in a couple of weeks here. Is there anything else you want to add here that you think is important or interesting that people should know before we let you go, Teresa?
Talking with Sheriff Sam Page, who is running for lieutenant governor, he is just thinking that, you know, with all this going on, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. You know, we had 9/11. Could there be something more pressing going on? Or with all the, you know, there's people coming from 150 countries into the United States. And we don't know who's coming in. They estimate 1% might be someone on the terror watch list. You know, it's something that's very important, something that we've avoided since 9/11. They've caught a lot of people in that same time frame since, with good policies and procedures that all went by the wayside now with the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. So it is something to keep in mind, just to, you know, be aware of everything and contact your legislators. Let them know that this is important to you, because we don't want another 9/11, and we don't want anything any worse coming up than that. So, just keep an eye out.
Teresa Opeka, executive branch reporter at the Carolina Journal. You can read her work at carolinajournal.com. Teresa, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Pete.
All right, take care. Yes, you too.
All right, hey, maybe you have heard by now DraftKings Sportsbook is coming to North Carolina. It's coming soon, on March 11th to be exact. DraftKings is one of America's top-rated sportsbooks with same-game parlays, money lines, and props. The best features like odds boost and live betting and social betting groups where you can share your bets with your friends in real time. DraftKings is safe, it's secure and reliable, and best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. And it all starts on March 11th. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and then place your bets on your favorite sports once it goes live. And again, it goes live on March 11th. And now here's the disclaimer. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Eligibility restrictions apply, subject to regulatory licensing requirements, and see terms at draftkings.com/sportsbook/NC.
In just, 48 hours here, a little bit more than 48 hours, we've got the WBT Cigar Club Meetup. No meat involved, as far as I know. It's going to be Thursday, February 29th, from 6 until 9 p.m., at the Vintage Whiskey and Cigar Bar in Gastonia. Brett Jensen's going to be there doing his show, Breaking with Brett Jensen, live. And you can check out all the cigars and the giveaways and the specials, courtesy of the Vintage. It is the WBT Cigar Club Thursday, February 29th, at the Vintage Whiskey and Cigar Bar in Gastonia. Seating is limited, so you're going to want to make your reservation, and you got to do that by email. You just send an email, be like, yo, let me in. And you send that email to cigar@wbt.com. And then you get the reservation, cigar@wbt.com. Right, so the U.S. House expected to delay delivering articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas by at least 1 week, maybe longer. Washington Examiner reports the GOP-controlled House is expected to wait until after Congress has averted a partial government shutdown on Friday to hand off the two articles to the Senate. Why? Why are they doing this? Well, and the delay, by the way, could be even longer. So here's why. Mayorkas was impeached by the House on February 13th, just in time for Valentine's Day. The vote was 214 to 213, which ironically was the date. The House was expected to deliver the articles across the U.S. Capitol by the end of the month. Senate procedures dictate that the upper chamber, the Senate, has to meet the day after articles have been delivered. Okay? Senators would then be sworn in as jurors, and an impeachment trial would follow, with representatives from the House serving as the prosecution. So once you hand off these articles of impeachment, it sets about the calendar, right? It starts moving things in a certain time frame. And they've got their spending bill to do. And so I think the play here is that they're going to wait, get the spending thing done, so this way it can't be weaponized against them, right? Because you can imagine how this goes. If they hand up the articles of impeachment and then the Senate has to, oh my gosh, we can't do anything to avoid the shutdown. We have to do this impeachment because Republicans see this. They're so busy trying to impeach somebody that they shut down the government, right? All the headlines write themselves on that. The Democrat-controlled Senate has even floated an idea to table the articles, to table them, which means you just set them aside. That hasn't been done in 20 different impeachment hearings over the course of American history. Never done before. The Senate could also move to launch a trial committee and refer the articles to that panel. If they try to table this measure, all they would need is a simple majority vote, so 51 votes. It would require, though, that every Democrat vote in a straight party line vote. No defections allowed. Don't know if they would be able to do that, but maybe we'll find out. But the big takeaway here is that no impeachment articles to be delivered to the Senate today, and possibly not for another week, maybe two, maybe three. We shall see.
All right. Do the current world events have you wondering whether we are teetering on the edge of catastrophe? Are you concerned it's going to reach our shores? Okay. So what are you doing about your concerns? Let me help. Carolina Readiness Supply. At CarolinaReadiness.com, whether you're looking to expand your emergency preparedness supplies or you have no idea where to even begin, Carolina Readiness Supply can help you. Food, water purifiers, tools, first aid kits, instructional materials, camping and hiking supplies even, because being prepared is just smart. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies and educational materials that you'll need for any kind of emergency. In Waynesville and always at CarolinaReadiness.com, veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
Thank you for letting me be a part of your day. I know you got a lot of options out there, but we won't talk about them. 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. You can send thy emails to Pete@thepetecallinershow.com. You can also hit me up on the Twitter machine at Pete Calliner. Chuck, welcome to the program. Hello, Chuck. What's going on?
Well, I just thought I listen to you a lot, and I Thank understand you. What you're saying and with about the crap going on in this country. But the thing is, I listened to that this morning about all the stuff coming in this country, but how come you never see that on the national news? I mean, I think if more people seen that all across this country, what's really going on, people would get up in the air and do something about it.
So
I don't hear any so-called journalists saying anything about that at night on the news or during the day when I watch the news. Nothing. It's all how great things is and how crappy Joe is doing such a great job, and you know, I just went and got half a basket of stuff at the grocery store, and it cost me $200-some. I can remember a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, it would be about $75. Why isn't this stuff published in a newspaper? Why aren't our so-called journalists telling what's really going on, all the criminals coming in, all the criminal activities by the illegals that are in here, to make people stand up and vote for people that would do something about it?
All right, so a couple things. What media are you watching or reading that you have noticed?
CBS.
You watch CBS?
In Charlotte, I watch CBS and a couple of those news stations. I change off every night from one to the other.
All right, and this is the local or the national stuff?
Yes, local, Charlotte.
Okay, so WBTV or WCNC, yeah. WSOC TV. Okay, so those local programs are less likely to carry the the national types of stories, they make those decisions in their newsroom. And to your point, though, if they are not getting packages that are fed down to them from the networks that they're like, you know, BTV is a CBS affiliate, for example, right? So if CBS is not creating content on that story and sending it down to their affiliates like WBTV, then they're not going to have the story to run, right? So that's one side of it. The other side of it is do they take the initiative and try to turn a local story out of something, which then, of course, gets to the story selection bias that occurs in every single news department.
I also watched the journalists. You know, there was three stations. I can't remember their name. One's Amir and that other lady. They never have anything on there about what's going on. They'll go over to Ukraine and dress up like they're doing something and talk about that, but they never talk about the fentanyl crap and going people in this country doing something.
Hmm. Okay, so what I was saying was that you have selection bias that occurs in these news departments where the people that are generating the story leads, these ideas, whether they're reporter...
But these journalists are not supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to be telling us what's going on. I mean, you're talking about there was three on national news after the local news is over to come on.
Right, CBS, ABC, and NBC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
They got so-called journalists come on, and like that one after he gets done, they say he's the journalist for America. I mean, he's a journalist for himself, but not America.
Boom. Okay.
The only people that listen to what's going on the radio, like you guys talk, really know what's going on.
Right. Well, I mean, I'd like to think that's because we do things a little bit differently as, you know, talk show hosts and such. But all of these. But look, I'm biased as well. Everybody is. And when I was a reporter, I was biased, and you could see the bias in the stories that I selected to cover. Stories that I think are newsworthy are going to be different than stories you think are newsworthy, right? This is what I was talking about with the story selection bias that occurs in the newsroom when people are picking stories to go cover, whether they're reporters that are generating the story ideas or the editors and managers who are saying, yes, go cover that story. They have to make determinations as to where to devote resources and time and manpower to go cover stories. And so if they don't think a particular story is newsworthy, they're not going to go cover it if they're even aware of it at all. And therein lies the problem with news departments that are sort of captured by one ideology. If everybody in the newsroom is a leftist, they're not going to know about certain stories because they're not aware that these things exist outside of their own echo chamber. It's a big problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if the answer is satisfying, but that's the answer, right? Or they are aware of the stories, but refuse to cover them because they don't want to make Biden look bad, right? Those are your options. It's either ignorance or corruption. Those are always the options. So, okay, or a combination of both. That's true. But those are the options here. They either do know about it or they don't know. And if they do know about it and are refusing to cover it, it's for a corrupt reason, right? I'm not saying they're getting paid or anything, but it's a corruption of the ethic. This is Jason Mayaris, Attorney General of Virginia. And by the way, the way these stories, quote, break through into the legacy media outlets is by people agitating enough around these stories, such as the murder of this woman in Athens, Georgia, right? People are aware of this story now because it was, oh my gosh, young, pretty girl out jogging, gets murdered, and then it turns out, oh, it's an illegal alien. Now, all of a sudden, like the story was already breaking through because it checked certain boxes, and then it's like, oh, no, now there's this other element. And so now there's this reframing, this refocusing, as I went over yesterday, right? To now it's, oh, it highlights the problems of jogging as a solo female. Eric Adams. This is pointed out by the Attorney General in Virginia. Eric Adams, back in October of 2021, so 2.5 years ago, said we should protect our immigrants, period. Yes, New York City will remain a sanctuary city under the Adams administration. That was what he tweeted. That was October 2021. Now, quote, a stunning turnaround from New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who is now calling for New York City's sanctuary city law to be changed so that some illegal immigrants who commit felonies can be turned over to ICE for deportation. Well, look at that. Keep sending more busloads from Texas. More, more, more. We're getting 5,000 people a day crossing into the country. Spread this pain everywhere. I don't like it. I don't want to do this. It's the only way this stuff breaks through. I've been a supporter of this tactic from the beginning because this is the only way that you're going to make people in these sanctuary cities, these quote-unquote elites, you got to bring the pain to their doorstep. And this is how you do it. Let's go back to the phones. Here is Ralph. Welcome to the show. Hey, Ralph.
Hey, Pete. Great bumper music there. Hey, Pete, the captain for the police department was on Fox News today talking about all the youth and the crime and repeat offenders and everything. I asked a question, and Tim Moore was getting ready to come on your show, and I had to go into some meetings, and I didn't know if you were able to ask Tim Moore why we couldn't repeal that law or change it about releasing these youths back to their parents and just, you know, like a turnstile thing where they, you know, keep releasing them back, and some of them have 20 offenses, some have 30, and I didn't know if Tim Moore commented on that.
Yeah, that was a while ago, right? That was...
Yeah,
he said, if I remember correctly, I'd have to go back and listen to exactly what he said. I thought he said something about revisiting it in the short session.
So, you know, I mean...
But, I'm sorry, I don't remember, I don't remember what he said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's amazing, and they're not teaching these kids. And they, you know, they closed that North Juvenile Detention Center down because of funding and lack of the officers to secure it and or supervise it. But you know, they're never going to get a handle on it by just releasing them back to their parents.
No, well, look. Also, there is a philosophy at play here, right? Of Democrats they don't want jails open. The decarceration movement inside the Democrat Party is a pretty influential movement. And you had county commissioners that were celebrating and most proud of their votes to close jails. So, everybody wants to pretend that there were all of these, you know, efficiency and financial reasons why everything got closed down. But look, you know, if they wanted fewer jail beds, they would have done nothing differently, right? If they want more jail space, then they would have gotten more jail space. They would have replaced it. Ralph, I appreciate the call. They are following through on a philosophy that calls for the very things that they've been doing. Sally, welcome to the show. Hello, Sally.
Yeah, Pete.
Yes?
I'm wondering why, when that nice gentleman called you just a few minutes ago and asked why NBC, CBS, the national news was not reporting the truth of the news, that was a perfect opportunity for you to say that the news, that national news is controlled by the Democratic Party, and the national news knows exactly what's going on all the time, but they do not report it purposely.
So did you hear what my first question was to him?
I heard the final question. Go ahead and repeat it.
All right. I asked him, are you talking about the local news or the national news? And then he said, The local news.
He said both.
No, first he said the local news. So then I started to go over why local news reporters and why local newscasts might not have those stories in them, because they're relying on the national networks to send that stuff down. I then went into the national side of stuff, where I said, yeah, I thought it was pretty clear when I said they don't want to report this stuff because it makes Joe Biden look bad.
I don't remember you even using the word Biden.
Well, then I would recommend you get the podcast and take a listen to it again, because I clearly did. Thank you, Sally. I appreciate the call. I clearly said it was Joe Biden, clearly said that they don't want to make Biden look bad. But then I went on to talk about, you have an entire, you know, all these newsrooms are captured by an entire political philosophy. This is what happens when you don't have people of a different mindset. I'm not really sure what exactly the problem was there. Anyway, the illegal alien charged with kidnapping and murdering a 22-year-old nursing student, Lakin Riley, got into the U.S. thanks to President Joe Biden's parole pipeline at the nation's poorest southern border. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials have since confirmed that Jose Antonio Ibarra is an illegal alien who first arrived at the United States-Mexico border in September of 2022 near El Paso, Texas. Rather than being held in detention or immediately removed, he was released into the U.S. interior via Joe Biden's parole pipeline. This, by the way, is a piece by John Binder, who is writing at Breitbart.com. He says DHS officials have privately suggested about 5,000 illegal aliens are released into the United States interior every day under Biden and Mayorkas. The DHS secretary, according to Border Patrol agents, has privately admitted that about 85% of all illegal aliens arriving at the border are released into American towns and cities. Even Ibarra was released into the U.S. interior. ICE officials confirmed this. He was arrested in August of 2023 in New York City, charged with injuring a child under 17 years old, as well as a motor vehicle violation. And the city's sanctuary policy, as well as New York State sanctuary law, allowed him to be freed from jail before ICE agents could request custody of him. That's the loophole. Thank you.